Welcome to Thriveology Lab Podcast, where we explore the science, philosophy, and practice of thriving. Our goal is to help you create a happier and healthier life through education, application, and transformation. Your co-hosts on this journey are Phil Dunwoody, that's me, and my good friend and colleague, Neil Oderback.
That's me. Hello, Phil. Welcome, Thrivers.
Hey, Neil.
Phil and I are both faculty at Juniata College, where we teach courses to promote human thriving and well-being. So I guess the first question, Phil, is why this podcast? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Why Thriveology Lab? I think you and I have noticed in our students an increase in depression, anxiety, other mental health issues. And I think we could arbitrarily divide sort of thriving in three different categories of sort of mental thriving, spiritual thriving, physical thriving. And if we expand that, then I think post-pandemic, we've also seen people suffer spiritually with things like languishing, to use Corey Keyes's term, feeling burnt out, not having a sense of purpose. And then, of course, the physical, we see still continuing rises in chronic diseases like obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease. And so how can we think of this systematically as thriving as a system? And we've been doing this with students since 2020 when we began our course at Juniata Ways of Wellbeing.
Yeah.
And we noticed year after year this is just a profoundly transformative experience for both them and us as we continue on our own journey. And what we've decided to do then is to try to bring this, what we've been doing with our students, to a larger audience.
Yeah, no, that's a great kind of rationale. I mean, the experience kind of that we've had teaching, and not just the two of us, but our colleagues here at Juniata, really mirrors national trends and national data, and that even before COVID, we were seeing this kind of pretty dramatic uptick in anxiety and depression, particularly in adolescents. And then, of course, the pandemic forced us all into social isolation, which is just really, really bad for our mental health. So, you know, and so what we've been seeing in those around us, not just our students, but our colleagues, our friends, ourselves, right, are these kind of increasing signs of burnout, struggles with well-being. And yeah, you know, as you mentioned, we've been teaching this course now for 4 years, this Ways of Well-Being course. And you know, I've been teaching for, 24, 25 years, and I've never taught a course before that students repeatedly have described as transformative, right? That they come out of it feeling like they're just happier and healthier and more centered, and they're not kind of thrown off balance as much by the stressors of life. It's been just an awesome experience, right? And so, yeah. So how do we bring this to a larger audience?
Right. And the course fills very fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think initially we might have thought, well, that's because the trip also, the course also takes a trip to Costa Rica. We go to a surf camp. We'll talk more about that later. But I think that's still an important component of it, to be sure. But I think that there's just a hunger and a desire to improve the quality of our lives, and as you mentioned, particularly for adolescents and emerging adults.
Right. Well, and one of the things that you and I share philosophically, right, which is, I think, really been how we've organized the course and how we're thinking about this podcast, is really that we have our relationship with well-being backwards in society, mm-hmm. right? Like, so for many of us, it's this thing we do after we're done working, if we have time, or if we really start to struggle, then maybe I should focus on either my physical or mental health or whatever. And it's when things go bad in your life that you realize that well-being is actually foundational to everything you do, right? When you're really struggling, you struggle in your relationships, you struggle in your job, right? You struggle to digest food, you struggle to sleep, right? All these things. So everything falls apart. So if that's true, then rather than putting kind of well-being as this, or thriving as this back burner thing we do if and when we have time, we should be prioritizing it in our lives so that everything else we do, we can do better, we can be more present, we can have more energy. And it's something we're not taught.
Right.
So, of course, we're taught math, we're taught science, we're taught some history, we're taught some, you know, these different things, which are all really, really important. But there's now this kind of growing literature on the science and practice and well-being in positive psychology, for one. But then also, of course, you know, you have these longer traditions as well. You know, we both do mindfulness, for example, right, and yoga. And there's now kind of just, you know, a ton of research showing about the mental health benefits of mindfulness as a practice, right, just as one of them.
And I think so, what I'm also hearing from what you're saying, Phil, is also, you know, and this is culturally, I think, how we also deal with sort of our healthcare system as well.
That yeah.
We're approaching this as a proactive, preventative systems approach rather than a treatment of something after the fact. And I think that's, for me, I think what even like the pandemic sort of called attention to is like some of the system was not in place. And it highlighted those shortcomings.
No, exactly. I mean, what we're talking about are not, yes, they can be used to deal with acute stressors in your life, but it's better to think about this as building resilience so that when things in your life go wrong, because they do, right, just shit happens, your ability to weather that storm is better. All right. So in this, like, so Thriveology Lab is what we're calling this, right? And this really reflects, I think, also our philosophy on teaching the course. We've designed the course that we teach not just as like content delivery, but kind of like if you think of like a chemistry lab, like, yes, there's content delivery, but you have to do the bench work, right? You have to actually do the lab work. So when we talk about the science and practice of well-being or the science, practice, and philosophy of well-being, it's not just, hey, there's this content. It's a practice. It's a lab. You have to experiment with it. You have to kind of develop these habits of mind.
And I think it's such a critically important feature, because while we in class and on this podcast are going to deliver some content and some research, we are all still ends of one. Like how I have to interpret this in my life, how I put it into practice. So I think as we've done in the class, try to empower young people to incorporate that as they can and see fit. And so even the people for this audience, how do you individually, not in a sort of a prescriptive way, but how do you take this information and adapt it for you and your needs and your life?
Yeah, exactly, right? So it's a lab, right? So that's where we're going to be talking about this in this podcast, you know, giving you things to try to work on. And Neil and I are tinkerers, right? This is our own life. We're always doing this ourselves. And topically, like we've already used several words to discuss what we're talking about. And so I think it's at least briefly unpack that, right? So thriving is one word. Flourishing is another. You and I have also used well-being, right? That's the name of our course. And these are, you can think of these kind of overlapping Venn diagrams. You know, academics love to debate definitions, but I think for our purposes, we can, you know, we're going to use them somewhat interchangeably. We'll dive into some of the differences. I think especially when you talk about happiness versus thriving and well-being, because we do want to, I mean, I want to be happier. Who doesn't want to be happier? But I think thriving, flourishing, well-being are not reducible to just the emotional experience of happiness, right? That's part of it, but that's not all of it by any means.
And when we break down what we will mean by thriving, flourishing, well-being, it is a more resilient state than just happiness. Happiness is sort of that cloud that passes. And sure, we all want it to come by more often, but even when it doesn't.
Right. And then like the tools we're using this, we've already mentioned some of them, right? Like, so I'm a psychologist by training. I always want to see, and my students is like, show me the data, right? Like, so you've got a claim, you've got something you care about, you know, the Jerry Maguire, show me the money, right? I'm like, show me the data. I want to see it. And so I do kind of draw a lot from philosophical traditions, particularly Taoism and Buddhism are big influences for me. But I always want to see the data. What's the science say? What do we actually know about these things, right? And I think you obviously lean into that as well, but you also probably lean even more into kind of some of the philosophy, right, and Greek Stoicism. And
I think, too, as a theater person, I'm also deeply embedded in story. And I think the power of story and hearing stories of from people and their lives and what we can learn from their lived experiences. And yes, the philosophy as well. So yin-yang.
Yin-yang, right? That's right. So you'll hear things throughout this podcast, you know, topically, just to give you, you know, we'll talk about nutrition, we'll talk about sleep, we'll talk about mindfulness and meditation practices, we'll talk about our bodies, right? Physical exercise, being in nature, and, you know, and we'll pull from kind of all those different traditions to essentially to explore those topics. So, you know what the topic is, you know what we're going to be doing. Who are we? Why are we qualified to do this, right? I think it might be helpful to kind of maybe share our kind of some of our individual narrative struggles, however you want to frame it, around like thriving and well-being. I'll start this for myself, partially because I've heard part of your story, and I think, frankly, it's a better story than mine. So I don't want to follow it. You know, so for me, like, and I had someone ask me this recently. I was talking to them about some research they were trying to do around well-being, and they said, like, when did this become your thing? And it was a little striking because it was like, A, they saw it as my thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had to kind of like self-assess, like, oh, interesting. So when did it become my thing and how? And like many paths, mine's been kind of, you know, a meandering one. When I went to college as an undergraduate student, I did what I see many of my students doing, which is like I rushed through. I was like in a hurry. Because I had to, of course, get somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. I had this idea I was going to go to grad school. So I went through undergrad in about 3 years. I took courses throughout the summer. I got good grades. I did well. I was not very happy, truthfully, right? And I realized that, I think really kind of as I was graduating, it was like, okay, I'm here. I got, quote, to this next goal, but I'm not satisfied. And then, you know, kind of the next thing that kind of comes to mind, I started graduate school. So I went to University of Georgia in a cognitive social psychology program. And my first semester there, I'm in a biological foundations of behavior class. And we're talking about essentially the impacts of chronic stress and how it degrades the body and what chronic stress does. I so distinctly remember this. The professor is writing these things on the board. These are the symptoms, you know, kind of problems sleeping, problems with digestion, and, you know, and I'm just, you know, being the good student. I'm diligently copying all these things into my notebook, and I get, you know, I get the list copied, and I'm like, holy crap, this is me. And, you know, to me, the wake-up call on this, and part of why it stands out, was if you had asked me if I was stressed, I would not have known, right? Like, So I think that's part of what we try and do as we teach students. And again, I think part of where the mindfulness comes in is this, we're often not used to paying attention to the signals that our body is sending us, and we're not used to interpreting them. Instead, we have this like, I must plow on, I must drive forward.
And would you have not have noticed because it just became, that's just what life is? Like you just got used to it, you think?
I think so. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think definitely. You know, so then, you know, so this is the beginning of my graduate school experience. So then throughout graduate school, I knew that it was kind of the most demanding environment I had been in terms of workload and expectations. And that's when I started doing yoga and Tai Chi and martial arts, because I felt like I needed to move my body. I was sitting all day and I was stressed. I needed outlets, right? And so, but it wasn't, it still wasn't part of what I did work-wise, right? It was this thing I did to kind of cope with work, which is different. Mm-hmm. I've been at Juniata for 20 years now. At some point, right, in what, 2018 or so, 2019, I saw your course proposal come through on this well-being course, and I was like, wow, this looks awesome, right? Like, I've been doing mindfulness, I've been doing yoga, I've been doing Tai Chi, and I reached out and said, hey, do you need someone to help teach this course, right? And so... teaching it once or twice yearly, you know, it's this constant reminder of, right, like we're of, okay, you know, here's all what all this literature says and here are these practices and what am I doing? And of course then we hit the pandemic, right? And the struggles we already saw both in our, you know, friends, colleagues, family, and students, just got so much worse. It seemed like everyone got so stressed, right? There's all this stuff on, you know, kind of the big quit and quiet quitting and burnout, right? That those terms are just everywhere now. And now we talk about workplace well-being. So not only as a professor were you and I talking about these things in our class, but then in my administrative roles at the college, I was trying to talk about burnout and workplace well-being because we were collecting survey data on it, right? We have national survey data, and part of my mission kind of institutionally has been to put this on the agenda as an actual institutional risk. We talk a lot about risk factors. We sometimes don't realize the role of burnout and disengagement in terms of an institutional risk, and that you can't have a thriving organization without thriving people, right? And so that this, again, this kind of this relationship backwards thing, right? So if really what we want is to be thriving organizationally, we need to think about what that means in terms of thriving as individuals, right? Not just at work, but at home as well. And so kind of throughout our lives. And so,
we have to think about these things and put it at the front. I think that's the benefit of the course, because you and I had been sort of for those decades, those years, whatever, thinking about it, but having a place to really like a lab, tinker and think through, like, wait, what does this actually mean? What is this? How do we operationalize this? So I think it's been as rewarding for us as it has been for the students, and it continues to be this lab, for me at least, if I can speak for myself, that I'm constantly tinkering.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. I've been teaching about mindfulness much longer than I've been teaching mindfulness itself, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's the Dalai Lama actually started it, gosh, I don't know how long ago it was, this called the Mind and Life Institute, which was kind of this collaborative between neuroscientists and Buddhist monks to look at the impact of meditation on our cognition and mental health. And I mean, it's clear impacts on not just lowering anxiety and depression, but it's a sustained attention task. So, right, you know, you see these measurable changes in the attentional pathways in your brain if you're doing MRIs, and of course, increases in self-reported happiness and well-being. And again, those areas of the brain thicken. But that was very different than actually teaching mindfulness, right? Which is kind of something we now you and I do. So I guess I've come to a place where I see this now not as something I just do to cope with my job, but actually my job.
Right. Yeah, that's great.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and the other part of it is, like, you know, I've lost like 3 people, you know, that are relatively close to me over the last 2 years. And like, none of us know how much time we have left.
Right.
Right. And like, what do I want to spend it on? Right. And if I can spread a little joy and happiness and well-being, that's a good thing to do with my time.
Mm. And that sense, I think, you know, we'll talk over our conversations here about savoring and we don't know how much time, and how can we savor the moments?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so your story is a good one.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's a good one.
I'm sorry, I don't want to build it up too much, but...
Well, I think if I really track back, and I think it's related to also the conversation we just had about pieces not being sort of part of the whole. So I didn't have a system. So if I track really back to the early 90s, I joined the Army, and the Army got me really into physical fitness. So I was just a little obsessive about it. But my nutrition was off. My sleep was off. I didn't have a sense of purpose. I didn't have these other things. But I thought the exercise alone was going to be sufficient. Flash forward to 2001. I'm finishing up grad school. I moved to New York City, and I got a job in Lower Manhattan working in Battery Park City. And I was there in Battery Park City on the morning of 9/11. And we were in the cul-de-sac of 2nd Avenue. The second plane hit. The buildings came down. We were all sort of covered in ash. We helped people get off to shuttle over to Jersey. And then I walked up to Washington Heights, which is about a 4-hour walk. All of which is to say, I developed from that moment profound panic attacks when I would fly. I would get breaking into sweats. My heart would race. I'd have all these horrible visions in my mind for years. And once they started having people fly again, for some reason, I was flying all the time. So I was constantly just beset by these horrible episodes. And a friend about 2004 suggested that we go learn to surf in Costa Rica. And so we did, and we went to what had just opened. It was called Vista Guapa at the time. And all week long, I was just fighting the waves and thrashing and just getting beat up by the ocean, because that's what the ocean will do if you don't.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's humbling.
It's humbling. And so it's about the end of the week, and the head coach at the time was a fantastic surfer, Alvaro Solano, and he's sort of very zen, very stoic, and he was out there floating on his board, looking out into the sunset. And I finally, after a grueling paddle out, made it to him, and I said, Alvaro, I am just so frustrated. I'm doing everything. I'm not getting any success here. I'm trying so hard. And he calmly, still looking out at the sunset, said, don't try so hard. Yeah. And it was one of those, it was such a silly thing to say, but it just sort of blew my mind. And I realized that so many of my problems were directly related to me trying hard to control things that were so out of my control. I was worried about, you know, what was going to happen to the plane. I was worried about, you know, I was trying to make the waves do something they weren't going to do. And what that began a shift in, you know, what Stoic philosophers would say is sort of the first tenet of Stoicism is to divide amongst things that which is and that which is not in your control, and focus your attention on your control. And so that started me down a path of yoga, eventually into mindfulness, beginning to look more at nutrition, beginning to look at my purpose. What was I doing? Why was I on this planet? And over the years and years and years and decades, sort of, you know, you and I then coming together and starting to build the thinking around this as a systems approach has been profoundly impactful to me. And I think, you know, if we can preventatively help somebody get there before we got there through some of that struggle and trial and tribulation, I would be very happy about that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, your statements about, like, you know, trying to control that which you can't control, it reminds me of some things in Taoism. There's some sayings, things like, the leader that does nothing accomplishes everything.
Right.
And it's like, okay, what does that mean, right? And they don't literally mean does nothing. But what they mean is that they work with the wave, if you will, right? They're not trying to dominate it through sheer force of will, which sounds like, right, which is what we often do, right? I'll just try harder, damn it. Instead of trying to kind of open yourself up to where things are headed, and we would say in Tai Chi, kind of to yield and flow with it, right? To work with the energy.
And there's a lot of cultural baggage around that. I think particularly as Americans, we think that we're like, you've just got to buckle down, muscle through it, and work.
Yeah.
And that's just not a sustainable approach. And I think, you know, sometimes I think people come to these ideas of thriving or going with the flow or, you know, working with the wave as sort of just acquiescence, like I give up. But that's not at all what we're talking about. It's accepting, here's the truth of my situation. What can I actually physically do here? Do those things.
Right. And this is, well, part of why we do this surf retreat, right, is that surfing is a wonderful analogy because you cannot control the weather. You cannot control the waves. You can try and work with the energy that is given to you, right? And do your best to do that. And you're trying to harmonize with it. And that is the only way you're going to actually be able to surf, right? And so I think it's just a wonderful analogy for life and all these things that we try and, you know, like, well, I'm going to, through sheer force of will, change these massive things that are much bigger than I am. And I'm not saying, again, we don't want to advocate for positive change. Absolutely, we do. But we have to recognize the waves to do that, right? And not try and just stop them.
Right. And I think surfing and Tai Chi, we do both sort of surfing and Tai Chi for the class. And I think they are such profoundly great analogies, because you also get what you often don't get in life is this sort of immediate feedback. When I try to control something and it does not go my way.
Yeah.
No, that didn't work. What can I do? What am I trying to do? And then if we can map over that real-time feedback and learning to other more conceptual things in our life, relationships that don't go the way we want to, and like how do we navigate those kinds of waves and yeah. partners in the world. I think that's – so whatever a person's skill, sport, tool,
yeah.
finding something that gives you that kind of immediate feedback
right.
Is really, I think,
the flow state, which we'll definitely explore yep. at some point during this podcast, right? Yep. Yeah. So it's probably a good time to transition maybe to the retreat that we run, right? So because we've been doing this we've run, I think, 6 of them now for students associated with the college. And then this March is the first time we're opening it up to the public, right, that anyone can kind of join. And to some extent, this came about because students who've graduated, because it's almost always seniors who take it because they register first, and the class closes like 3 minutes after registration opens, have said, like, I want to go back. Like, this was, you know, students have said things like, I didn't know I could be this happy, right? You know, and like, you know, and that's both sad and beautiful at the same time, right? And so the trip that we run, and you know, we really are explicit about talking to the students about, this is not like a spring break vacation.
Right.
This is a retreat, and that's different, right? And a retreat is about being more intentional and introspective, so that you bring something back with you that you do differently in life, right? Mm-hmm. You're kind of trying to change, at least in some incremental way, how you're spending your energy, right? And we ask our students to do this at the end of the week in Costa Rica. We ask them, make one kind of concrete commitment related to your own well-being, your relationship with well-being. And you know, while we're there, oh gosh, the food is so good, right? We get this kind of freshly cooked food every day. We're
local.
It's very sustainable, organic, locally produced. We're doing a lot of physical things throughout the day, so like through after all that play, right, because we are playing, then we sleep so well. Mm-hmm. Right. And so students say things like, you know, I mean, for me, I come back thinking like, I need to eat better.
Right, right?
For as much as I focused on that cooking fresh food, I mean, my digestion, my body just works better.
Yeah. And I think that also, you know, one of the other things I like to think of is, you know, a vacation is sort of checking out from the world.
But when you
come back to the world, all of the problems are still there.
Yep.
A retreat is an opportunity to check in and tinker and work on those things. And what if you spent a week and lived your ideal life? Like, what would it really be if you just dedicate 1 week to really living as true to those values as possible? And then, yeah, what can you take away that's sustainable, even if it's just one thing from that week?
Yeah, exactly. So this is our you know, kind of shameless self-promotion plug here, right? And that we are going to be doing this retreat in March. We'll put a link down below for anyone interested in it. But it'll involve a week of some surfing, and most of our students have never surfed before. Quite a few of them are frankly afraid of sharks and swimming. And so this just to say, you do not have to be a surfer. You do not have to be, you know, like crazy physically active or anything to do this. We'll be doing yoga almost daily. We'll be doing mindfulness. And you and I will actually be doing kind of some pre-course material, right? On reflecting on values and kind of covering a little bit of the literature, so that when we get there, you've already been kind of reflecting on this a little bit and thinking about your own relationship with well-being.
Right.
So we'll put the dates. Yeah, join us. Absolutely.
Join us.
Oh, it's such a wonderful experience. I mean, I look forward to it every year. It's kind of my recharge and recenter. And I come back and I feel like, you know, I often do a good job in the beginning, right? Of like keeping that center and that feeling. Cause it's you and I talk about this, right? Like, I don't think there's any such thing as balance. It's balancing, mm-hmm. right? It's right. this like constant struggle. So because everything is changing around us, nothing is static. Right. So whenever you think you've got it figured out, well, life is going to throw you a curveball, right? Yeah. And so it's this constant kind of reassessment and working with the energy that's around you to try and hold true to yourself, prioritize your own well-being so that you can show up to all of those things that matter to you, right? You know, family, friends, work, whatever those commitments are.
Yep.
And so with that, I think that wraps up our first podcast.
We did it.
You can expect these, we will say near weekly.
Near weekly.
We aspire to do them roughly weekly. And we're shooting for this like 20 to 40 minute mark, right, in terms of time.
Which I think we did today.
Which we did. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to hearing from you and hopefully seeing you on our trip to Costa Rica to Surf Synergy in March.
Thank you, friends.
Thank you.
See you, Phil.
See you, Neil. Thrive on.